and aligned themselves with American coalition forces and are pursuing a moderate agenda in rejecting Al-Qaeda and Iran's influence, they would pick up the paper and said, oh my God, what's going to happen to me and my family?
Indeed, that was one of my biggest worries. Had this amendment to the defense authorization bill, this Levin amendment that says, "Okay, we're getting out. We don't know how many are leaving, but we know we're leaving." Coincidentally, Jeff Sessions, what he had to say, he was just echoing what Jeff Jacoby had to say in the Boston Globe yesterday. If you would like to read it for yourself, I think you should. You go to boston.com, click on Jeff Jacoby, and it's called The Consequences of Quitting. Coincidentally enough, joining me on the hotline is Jeff Jacoby. See how those things work, Jeff, around here?
Not a coincidence. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. We started out the show this morning, by the way, with the ABC report that Barack Obama thinks that we should be teaching sex education in kindergarten now.
Good to know that he's got his priorities straight.
He certainly does. And by the way, he put a price tag on ending poverty in the United States. I don't know if you saw that.
What is that price tag?
$1 billion.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it'll take. Fox reported last night that John Edwards thinks it's going to be $14 billion. But Barack can end poverty with just $1 billion.
It sounds like something that, why am I blanking on the name? Microsoft. Bill Gates could probably do out of petty cash if it's as little as that, isn't it?
It's a billion here, a billion there. You know, they drop that much on lunch inside the Beltway.
That's right. Well, this is why God created Democrats, in order to remind us that money really isn't worth anything and just keep on taxing people and they'll find ways to spend it.
It's all their money, Jeff. My mom used to tell me they just let us keep some of it.
That's exactly right.
Here is John McCain yesterday. I think this dovetails nicely with what you had to say.
This is, or could be, an historic moment because it could be for the first time in 45 years that the Congress of the United States, not just the Senate, but the Congress of the United States has not passed a defense authorization bill and had that bill signed by the President of the United States. We all know why. We all know why. Because they tried to load it up with their agenda on Iraq, knowing full well that in September, General Petraeus is coming back and giving a report, and we will have another debate and votes at that time. Now, what have we done by not passing the defense authorization bill? We are not allowing a 3.5% pay raise to the men and women in the military. We're not modernizing their equipment, including MRAP. We are not passing the Wounded Warriors legislation, which we all know is vitally needed to care for our wounded veterans. We have placed the care of our wounded veterans in a lower priority than a debate over Iraq, which we all know that debate is going to take place again in September.
He got hot yesterday. He may have gained some points.
You know, I don't know if I want John McCain to be president, but wouldn't we be in a whole lot better shape if he were Secretary of Defense right now?
I think some people had mentioned that, about 6 years ago. But you talk about the consequences of quitting Iraq. Tell us about those consequences, Jeff.
Well, one of the things that I have found really striking about the way this whole debate is unfolding is that, you know, for years we've been hearing people bashing the Bush administration for what they call a rush to war, rushing into Iraq without properly thinking through all the consequences. And yet now we see so many of them, Levin just being one of the most prominent, virtually every one of the Democratic candidates for president, demanding that we pull out of Iraq. And I hear very little discussion of what the consequences will be. So if it was wrong to go into Iraq without thinking it through, why isn't it even wronger, even more criminal, to talk about pulling out? We've had some experience with cutting off support for an ally with whom we've been involved overseas. And I wrote in the column about the debate that took place in 1975 when President Ford was in the White House and begging Congress not to cut off military aid to the anti-communist governments in Southeast Asia. And as there is now, there was then on the Democratic side of the aisle, and back then Democrats controlled Congress, a demand that we cut our ties, we no longer do anything to support the government of South Vietnam, the government of Cambodia, and no matter how much Ford pleaded that this was going to lead to disaster, his words weren't heeded. Congress did indeed cut off support. And at the time, you had people, I quote your current senator, former congressman, Chris Dodd, saying that the greatest gift our country can give to the Cambodian people is peace, And the best way to accomplish that goal was by ending military aid. So Washington ended military aid, and Cambodia fell to the Khmer Rouge, and 2 million people were killed, and we had one of the worst genocides of modern times.
The killing fields, it was one of the bloody, it's a stain on this country that most of the folks on the left don't want to be reminded of. It's horrible.
I would like to know what Chris Dodd, who's running for president now, has to say about his performance then, and whether that in any way shapes or influences his view of what the right thing to do in Iraq would be. You know, I've been getting interesting responses to this column. You write about Iraq or the Middle East, and the mail comes pouring in. I've been heartened by the number of people who have written to say, you know, I was against this war. I didn't think we should go in the first place. But we're in there now, and whatever you think about the past, our responsibility now is to try to get the present and the future right. And you know, heartening to hear from people who say that even though I was against the war, you know, I'm also against pulling out and leaving a bloodbath to erupt in our wake. But from so many people in the anti-war camp and the anti-Bush camp, all they're interested in is the politics of how the war plays in this country. They want to pull the troops because they think that that will somehow advance their cause politically. And I just think that that's incredibly irresponsible.
The Democrats, I think, have conceded that they're, in fact, somewhere tucked deep in the recesses of all the sound bites that I have. Yeah, there'll be a bloodbath, but that can't be our concern. If you want to prevent a bloodbath, here's the best way of putting it, if you really want to know the truth. This is Carl Levin. I'm going to keep. Can you stay with us a little?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Here's Carl Levin. Carl Levin yesterday, listen to what he says is the best chance for us to win in Iraq is.
The American public deserved an up or down vote. They didn't get it today because they were thwarted by the Republicans. But what they did see today is who is fighting day and night to change the course in Iraq from a failing course that we're on to give us a chance for success in Iraq by forcing the Iraqi leaders to resolve their political differences and to take responsibility for their own nation.
So our best chance for success in Iraq is to pull out and let them fend for themselves.
Well, you know, if he feels that way, then why did he vote to confirm General David Petraeus as the commander, the American commander in Iraq? That general was confirmed, what was it, just 2 months ago, not even, unanimously by the U.S. Senate. The vote was something, I forget what it was, 89 to nothing, 91 to nothing, something like that. So how do you justify confirming a general who has come before your committee, testified to exactly the strategy that he wants to carry out, this surge strategy, give him a unanimous vote of approval, send him to Iraq, and then say we're gonna pull the rug out from underneath him before he has a chance for his strategy to be put into practice and tried out? You know, it's just, as I say, just totally irresponsible. And if they were thinking beyond the day after tomorrow, you know, it would be nice to hear some kind of thoughtful concern and consideration for the horror that may erupt if we pull out so quickly.
You write in your column on April 13th, 1975, 4 days before the communist reign of terror began, Sidney Schamberg's front page story in the New York Times, where else, was headlined, "Indochina Without Americans, for Most a Better Life." In retrospect, perhaps such drastic misjudgments can be partly excused on the grounds that Americans really didn't know what horrors Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge were capable of. But in this case, you write, there is no such excuse for those insist on pulling out of Iraq, for they know only too well what horrors al-Qaeda, AQ, and its jihadist allies are capable of. Beheadings, suicide bombings, lynchings, child murder. We detailed played some sound from Michael Yon's website, former member of Army Special Forces, now over there as a citizen journalist. We detailed the slaughter of Bakuba that he uncovered along with the American soldiers that the AP still has not reported
on.
Right. The slaughter of Bakuba, this was just one town that the Americans had left and then had to go back in and retake. Jeff, Michael details, four children who were beheaded. Their heads were buried next to their two parents. It is believed by the Iraqi soldiers that what they did before they killed the parents was behead the children in front of the parents and then killed the parents.
We've had so much experience in the last 6 years with what the jihadists are capable of doing. I don't understand what there is left for people to have to speculate about. After 9/11, what was there to wonder about? They, you know, when they sentenced 3,000 innocent people basically to be incinerated to death, And we're still, you know, acting as though there's some kind of mystery about whether things will be any worse if we let Iraq fall into the hands of Al-Qaeda. And yet, you know, something in this column here that you were quoting at the end of a long list of examples of the kinds of things that that radical Islamists are capable of doing, I included 9/11, because after all, for Americans, that's the premier example. Would you believe all the mail that I started getting from people saying, oh, here we go again, the old Iraq 9/11 bait and switch. We didn't go into Iraq because of 9/11. Or, you know, Iraq and Saddam Hussein weren't responsible for 9/11. There's this refusal on the part of so many on the left to acknowledge the fact that Iraq is one front at the moment, I would say the most important front, in this global jihad that's being waged against us. And if we give up there, if we surrender there, if we once again send a message that we're not going to stay in this fight to the finish, then all we're going to do is strengthen even more and inflame even more the determination on the part of our enemies to keep hitting, keep fighting, keep shooting, keep killing. We pulled out of Vietnam, and that sent a message, and we pulled out of Somalia, and that sent a message, and we pulled out of Lebanon after the Marine barracks was blown up, and that sent a message. And Osama bin Laden did this videotape in which he said, when people see a strong horse and a weaker horse, they naturally follow the strong horse. And he meant that he and his followers, the jihadis, are the strong horse, and America, which always gives up before the fight is over, is the weak horse. And I hate the thought that we're going to do that all over again.
I think it was Peter Brooks who said to me, he said, look, everybody loves a winner. And if the United States pulls out, there is just no question, he said, in his mind, that people just, hey, listen, I'm going to jump on the Yankees bandwagon. Not, by the way, people, please don't. I'm not equating Al-Qaeda with the New York Yankees.
You know, I was reading just yesterday something from 2002, it was something about how I can't remember if it was in Kuwait or in Saudi Arabia or something, there was some kind of movement in a moderate direction. They were dropping some kind of really atrocious rules. And the explanation that was given for doing that is that they see what the Americans are accomplishing in Afghanistan and they can read the handwriting on the wall. We have forgotten already that when the United States shows that it's going to use its power and move the ball in the right direction, that we're going to put the people like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda on the run, that we're going to demand that there be democracy and freedom in the Middle East, and we're going to put some muscle into making that demand stick, it starts to have an effect. You know, for a while there was that talk about the Arab Spring and all these newspapers with the headline, could Bush have been right? Was Bush right?
Yeah.
You know, if it works in that direction, it works in the other direction too. And if we let the momentum go backward, if we let the momentum go on behalf of getting out of Iraq and letting Al-Qaeda have yet another notch in its belt, we're going to see an awful lot of suffering that's going to be caused because of it.
My guess is, I could be wrong, it's not going to be pretty. Jeff Jacoby is our favorite columnist at the Boston Globe. You can go to boston.com. The title of the article is The Consequences of Quitting Iraq. Go to boston.com and read Jeff's article right now. Or if you like, we get the Boston Globe here. If you get the Boston Globe, it's in yesterday's paper. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, Jim.
Take care, sir.